An ANIAC man has died in a plane crash. Inland Aviation owner Stephen Hill crashed Tuesday night as he was flying a Cessna 207 from ANIAC to Chuuk-Atbakluk, and at the time, a significant snow squall had started. The 61-year-old pilot was the only one on board. State troopers, wildlife troopers, and volunteer searchers from both villages searched the area. The plane was found at about 1:45 in the morning in a heavily forested area about 3 miles southwest of Chuuk-Atbakluk. It appeared that Hill died on impact. The body will be sent to the state medical examiner's office for an autopsy. The National Transportation Safety Board and Federal Aviation Administration will investigate the cause of that crash. A state health official says one person in Southeast has been hospitalized for a suspected case of paralytic shellfish poisoning. Health Department spokesman Greg Wilkinson says a Metlakatla family harvested cockles and butter clams and ate them on Tuesday. One family member was hospitalized after experiencing tingling that went to the fingers and feet. Two others had symptoms including tingling in the mouth, but the feeling went away. An Environmental Protection Agency investigator says BP ignored alarms that warned of the likelihood of a 13,000-gallon oil spill in 2009 on the North Slope. Matt Goer of the agency's criminal division in Anchorage testified on Tuesday. Federal prosecutors are asking a judge to revoke BP Alaska's probation from a 2007 misdemeanor conviction for a 200,000-gallon spill. Prosecutors say BP is a recidivist offender of environmental laws and the company remained negligent in monitoring pipelines. BP contends the 2009 spill was an accident and not a criminal act. BP attorneys are expected to argue that the company's probation from the 2007 conviction should end. The clock is ticking toward a decision on the fate of the Douglas Post Office. The 60-day public comment period ended last week on the U.S. Postal Service proposal to close it. Blessie Lockman at the Alaska Postal District Office in Anchorage has the job of reading every comment.
I'd stop counting. I have a pile that I have to go through, and I have to read each one. Actually, I have to enter them in the system. And they will become part of our docket.
Lockman is one of the Alaska district staff who will recommend the Douglas Post Office close or remain open. One of the last letters that she received came from members of Juneau's legislative delegation who were concerned that postal officials may not have all the facts. They say the analysis should look at the space available at alternative post offices. The closest is in the downtown federal building. Representative Kathy Munoz says closing Douglas may create a whole new problem for the Postal Service.
The alternative site, the downtown site, already has a long waiting list for box holders, and we're not even sure if the box holders from the Douglas facility will be able to be accommodated at the downtown facility.
568 box holders would be displaced if the Douglas station closes. They would have to rent a box at another Juneau post office or get home delivery. Juneau Postmaster Susan Johnson says there is no waiting list at the federal building, and there are more than enough vacant boxes to accommodate the Douglas box holders. All Juneau mail is processed at the Mendenhall Valley post office. Lawmakers' letter also notes that the Postal Service should consider finding ways to reduce costs at the Douglas Post Office so it could stay open. For example, renegotiating the lease or moving to another Douglas location or reducing the number of hours the post office is open to save personnel costs. Lockman of the Alaska Postal District says such changes could be part of the recommendation for Douglas. The recommendation will be considered by the U.S. Postal Service Western Area Office in Denver. If the station is to close, the public will then have 30 days to appeal to the Postal Regulatory Commission. If a shutdown is the final decision, then Lockman says it will not happen until February. Four other Alaska post offices are still on the U.S. Postal Service list for possible closure. They include the Postal Store and Elmendorf Air Force Base Post Office in Anchorage, and the Fort Wainwright Military Base and the Eielson Air Force Base Postal Stations in Fairbanks. Alaska Public Offices Commission staff is recommending more than $2,000 in penalties and costs from a legislative staffer who announced plans to run for the House without filing with the commission. Filing is a prerequisite to running. David Scott is a chief of staff to Senator Donnie Olson and still employed by the Legislative Affairs Agency. Legislative staff are not allowed to run for office. Commission staff attorney Martha Tansik says she warned Scott his candidacy violated reporting requirements, and he rescinded his candidacy, but Tansik says that appeared to be a technical act since he told the media that he was still running. Scott has said he would not comment further publicly so as not to appear to be trying to influence the AIPAC proceedings. The number of students receiving free or low-cost school lunches and breakfasts is increasing around the nation and in Alaska this year, and that's leading state lawmakers to prepare for an extra push during next year's session for bills that would help local school districts feed those children by providing state money for the nutrition programs. Dave Donaldson has more.
Although there is a child nutrition program within the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development, the state does not contribute any money to see that kids eat on a regular basis. Financial help comes from the federal government, $34 million 2 years ago, and an expected $50 million this year. The problem is growing. The New York Times reports that on a national level, there are 17% more children taking part in the program than there were 4 years ago. Statewide totals are not available for the current school year, but the School Nutrition Association says 41% of all Alaska students qualify for meal assistance. Locally, 39% of the kids in Anchorage qualify for the programs. In Kenai, 47% qualify. And in some schools, all the kids, 100%, get free or reduced lunches and breakfasts. In Fairbanks, the number of kids on the program has climbed from 4,088 a year ago to 4,365 this year. Alaska is only one of 12 states that doesn't help feed its kids. And bills by Juneau Republican Kathy Munoz and Anchorage Democrat Bill Willikowski would change that. Willikowski says the state should be embarrassed.
There's a huge amount of studies on this. It really is amazing the benefit that you get just from feeding kids breakfast, just from making sure that they're getting food before they go to school or during school. So when you look at all the money that we're spending for education, we spend over $1 billion per year. If we can make a small investment in getting kids some food in their stomachs, I think we can have a much better education system.
Both bills call for the same level of state support, 15 cents for each lunch, 35 cents for each breakfast. That would provide a little more than $2 million for the program statewide, above federal and local support. Munoz says it's enough money to help.
It's a match, and this would provide a state participation in the program that already exists. It's currently primarily a federally funded program. However, individual school districts around the state also contribute, and that money comes out of the general school operation.
Amy Rouse is the director of nutrition services for the Fairbanks North Star Borough Schools. She says the increases in her district show that the national problems of poverty are also here in Alaska. But she says the increased demand has not resulted in nutritional change. The school district is helping cover any shortfalls, and cuts so far have come from non-food items.
We do not want to compromise the quality of the food that we give to the students. You know, we take a huge responsibility for exposing them to a wide variety of foods. They may not like them all, but at least they're getting to see them, sample them, things like that. And you know, increasing whole grains, increasing access to fresh produce items, lowering sodium, taking into account purchasing local where we can afford to do so, limiting preservatives where we can afford to do so. I mean, those are all primary focuses of our menu planning.
Rouse says the lunches cost an average of $2.64 apiece. 15 cents from the state is not going to make or break what is now happening. But she says it will help the program evolve and improve. Both Munoz's and Willikowski's bills have been in the House Finance Committee since February without any attention, although both sponsors have requested hearings. A Senate bill was in the same position in 2010, but it ended the session in committee also without a full vote in the House. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Oil markets are going through a lot of fluctuations this morning. At the moment, Brent crude is at $109.19 a barrel, and West Texas Intermediate is at $100.18 a barrel. Gold up slightly in New York spot market trading, currently at $1,751.80 an ounce. Silver also up a bit, currently at $33.34 an ounce. A new study by an environmental group shows that sled dogs on the Yukon River have higher levels of mercury than other sled dogs eating a commercial diet. From Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes has the story.
The mercury is thought to be counteractive to some of the antioxidant benefits of the omega-3 fatty acids in a salmon diet. This particular study looked at sled dogs all along the Yukon River as far down as Russian Mission. It found that the higher the mercury levels in the dogs, the less antioxidants were found in the dogs. Meanwhile, the dogs fed a balanced commercial diet had what the study called a much higher total antioxidant power. One of the study's authors, Lawrence Duffy, says other studies have shown omega-3 fatty acids, found in abundance in salmon, have protective properties against toxins, but mercury can prevent those benefits.
Even though you're having antioxidants in your diet, it will lower your level of antioxidants and make you more vulnerable possibly to inflammation and maybe other immune-related problems.
However, the benefits of a salmon diet still outweigh the small levels of mercury that go along with it. The study suggests that sled dogs and people eating subsistence diets should continue to eat the salmon. Duffy says monitoring contaminants in the environment is becoming increasingly important as the climate is changing. He says sled dogs can help researchers because they eat the same food as people eating a traditional subsistence diet.
One of the good things about Alaska is we have a companion up here to sled dogs who could be used as a excellent medical model to observe these changes going on both in the laboratory and in the field.
Duffy says they would like to pursue using sled dogs as a model in other studies about people living in the north.
We're trying to incorporate this into stroke studies that are being discussed and surveys.
The study was published in Environmental Research Letters, a scientific research-based publication. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Ketchikan's former hospital is in such a dilapidated state that city officials say it will likely collapse this winter. The city has hired a firm for a demolition plan for the privately owned Bodden Street structure. The building, which most recently was an apartment building, has been deteriorating for years, but recently rain and snow have accelerated the process, which has left it with a sagging roof and bulging exterior wall. The sidewalk near the building has been closed, and the city of Ketchikan is coming up with a contingency plan in case it starts to crumble. Those include putting up netting to catch falling debris and closing the street if it fails. City officials have put $1 million into next year's budget for demolition. And at least one Anchorage bear has not settled in for its winter nap. A couple in Anchorage's hillside area woke up early Tuesday to a ruckus outside. It was a brown bear who was raiding bird feeders, knocked down part of a wooden fence, and also mashed up an unused dog pen. Charles and Dolores Weiler set out the bird feeders after they thought the local bears must be asleep by now. State biologist Sean Farley says it's not unusual for brown bears to still be awake. Farley's work has included tracking bears with radio collars, and he says some of the animals remain out until Christmas or even later. Farley says there have been continued sightings of bears, including recent tracks on hillside cross-country ski trails.